Ladies and gentlemen, this is a special Such Good Shoot interview extravaganza! So join Isaac, Dozer, and Shane in lighting up a cold one and cracking open a joint here on Such Good Shoot! Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the most must-see show on the Johnners Podcasting Network. Welcome to Such Good Shoot, and tonight we are shooting with the legendary Mike Chioda!
What's happening, guys? How you doing, brother? Thanks for having me on tonight, man. What's up, Isaac, Dozer, Shane? What's
going on? Thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure to have you, man. This is, like, truly an honor and really excited to talk and, you know, just sort of pick your brain a little on
a different
aspect of the business that a lot of people sort of, you know, like, especially when you're doing your job right, you know, you're not noticed for the most part, you know.
True.
So yeah, it's really an honor to have you here. And you know, I just want to ask, you're a Jersey boy.
Yeah, dirty Jersey boy, that's it, man. I was born in Bayonne, New Jersey, 66, and then we moved up.
Bayonne? Oh, yeah. Shit. I've got a good friend in Bayonne.
Do you really? Cool, yeah, man.
That's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Secrets of the Ooze.
Yeah.
That's where the ooze, that ties into wrestling, too, with Kevin Nash. So.
Yeah, right. But, yeah, and my family, we moved up in 1974. We moved up to South Jersey. It was like moving across, you know, to a whole other ball game, moving outside of Philadelphia and growing up in South Jersey. So, you know, coming from the city, it's almost basically living in New York City, living in Bayonne, you know. So
yeah, it's close.
But, yeah, it's cool now. And then I moved out some years ago. I moved out to Houston, Texas for about 14 years, and I'm here in Tampa, Florida now. So nice Tampa, Florida, palm trees and nice beaches. So
there you go. Yeah.
Better beaches than Jersey.
Yeah, you got that right. That's the truth.
Well, I mean, and you know, you've had, I guess, the privilege of getting to travel basically fucking everywhere.
Yeah, fucking everywhere, bro. I mean, you're talking like I've been to over 60 different countries and a lot of countries over and over and over. And all throughout a lot of the countries in Europe and stuff like that. Japan for over 30 something years. Been going there every time we went there. I was in Japan. So yeah, it's been a quite experience all throughout the United States, throughout driving the trucks and setting up the ring with Tony Chimmel. And you know, we drove the trucks all over through Canada and a lot of places. So it's been an experience, man. I mean,
you definitely got like, you're like, okay, now I've been all over. I know where I want to go now.
Oh, yeah. That's the truth, man. Yeah, awesome. Bucket list is already there, you know, and now I'm doing it. I'm going to be doing it more for vacation, you know, and just be able to spend more time with joy.
Yeah, so what's your favorite country to visit? You know what I mean? In wrestling or by yourself?
By myself, you know, I'd say Spain, Australia. Australia is probably their number one, man. Australia, New Zealand, that's fantastic out there. Melbourne and Sydney are some awesome cities there, you know. Tokyo, Japan, for certain reasons. There's so many countries for certain reasons. Cultures and this and food and party and lifestyle and everything. I mean, you know, I remember back in the day going to the Philippine Islands. That was a trip, bro. you want to talk about picking, like, you know, I'll take number two, or I'll take N10, and then I'll take N22. It's just, if you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. Why?
Yeah.
I'll take those numbers too. I don't care.
Yeah. I got some great pictures with, it was Rikishi some back in the day, man, when he was young.
And the Sultan there.
It was Tonga, Ha'aku. And, from the Philippine Islands, you know, with a bunch of girls in a strip club one night and all that. So I find some cool shit in the last year and a half. I've been digging through all my stuff, you know.
You actually get a little bit of time to, I mean, 31 years of basically, well, yeah, you never, I mean, did you, like, how, what was the longest break you, you took in that time.
Well, I was 35 years full time. I debuted in TV refereeing in like 89, I want to say. So I started refereeing like in 87 and everything. That's why, like, basically I debuted in 89. So it was really more 31 years of debuting as a referee on TV.
Yeah.
And that's why I got a shirt for 31 years or this and that. And so, you know, it's 35 years with the company because I started on the ring crew. So, and I actually worked for Gorilla Monsoon.
Well, you live near him?
Like, yeah, it was 5 minutes. You know, we're Willingboro, New Jersey. I was 5 minutes from him. So I grew up with Joey and his sister, Valley Morella. You know, Joey was really good friends of mine. So, and before he passed, God bless. And, you know, so that's how I started doing wrestling. But when I was 15 in the summertime, you know, 16, worked with Victor Quiñones that ran the ring crew for Gorilla Monsoon, because everybody had a certain territory before Vince took over everything. Because, you know, Vince Sr., I was working for, like, actually working for Gorilla, but Gorilla was working for Vince Sr. That's when Bruno had his territory in Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh. Jersey was Gorilla to Salisbury, Maryland, Philadelphia, and all that. And I used to do ring crew and set up the ring, take robes. Joey never wanted to sell programs. And I was like, fuck, I got to sell fucking programs. I went out, I'd get $50 for each job, you know, about 75 for the ring, $50 for robes, $50 for jackets, and $50 for timekeeping or playing music during the show. So you got paid individually. Arnie Scolden would sit there with a big briefcase of money, fucking a Halliburton, just pay out the cash what you did for the night. Wow. Then I'd go sell programs, right? So I'd go sell fucking, I'd go, how much am I making on the fucking programs, Vic? And it was Joey didn't want to sell them. Tony didn't want to sell them. Joey's a referee at the time, so he wasn't, you know. So I was like, all right, well, how much? He was like, it's 10 cents off the dollar. I wound up selling like 1,500, 2,000, 3,000 programs in Philadelphia Spectrum, Salisbury, Maryland, when we used to do that. Like Wildwood, New Jersey, we used to do the convention center. It held 1,500 people. You know, Andre would be on the card, Rick Martel, Tony Garea, fucking Paul Rowe, you know, whatever. But Jim Powers. And then, I would sell 3,000 programs on the boardwalk, a buck a piece with a card in. You know, the one bullshit little card with 8 matches, you know. I'd make $500 a night, bro. I had 4 cars by the time I was 17.
I mean, that's money than some of the wrestlers on the card were making.
in 1983, 82.
Most of them.
You know, so, and I did that for a couple of years. In the summertime, I did it a lot because I was off from school. And then I would do it sometimes on the weekends when it was local, you know, and just take the trip Friday night, come back Sunday night late and go back to school Monday, but in high school. But so I did a lot in the summertime, but I made a lot of money doing it, man. You know, so it was, I knew it was good when I didn't want to go play baseball and shit like that. So I just went another way with my career and went into wrestling, man. So I was kind of intrigued by Hulk Hogan and all that shit, you know, starting out there.
That's I can see why it would be a fascinating business. And if you're seeing that kind of money at such a young age, especially at that time, like,
yeah, it was. Yeah.
To get hooked.
It was hooked. It was, got hooked in, and you got hooked into the, what you were doing too, because it was just easy cash. It was fun. You know, you spend a weekend on the road, or sometimes you do a few, 3 or 4 or 5 days on the road back then, you know, with doing a certain territories that Gorilla had, you know, it was pretty cool, man. So, I mean, and, you know, traveling with Joey and Tony Chimmel and a buddy of ours, Kevin Means, used to do the ring crew back then. But, you know, I know it was good money, but my dad got sick in 84. So he took a massive stroke, and I went back into wrestling because I knew I wasn't going to proceed my baseball career after that. Mm-hmm. And so I just needed to make some more money, and Gorilla got me set back up. You know, Joey did too, so it was cool.
And yeah, Joey trained you to be a referee?
Yeah, he helped a lot, definitely, man. Oh, yeah. Gorilla gave me all the words of wisdom. Don't be a stooge in this business. You know, like you said, and refereeing is longevity in his business. You know, forget being a fucking wrestler, yet going in there taking bumps. You can have a good 5, 10, 15 career, good career, but most of these guys don't have that long of a span of a career. Only very few guys in the business will have a very long span in the business, you know?
And it's being a ref's kind of like being a kicker in football.
Yeah, just needed, right? Just needed. So, I mean, you know, the longevity of being a referee without taking bumps. And, you know, a wrestler can have a good 5-year run with a title. I mean, well, these days, 6 months or a year, but, or a couple months with a title, they change so much. But, you know, having so much longevity as a referee is just definitely a lot less toll on your body, taking bumps and traveling every freaking night. Because, you know, that's where a lot of wrestlers back then got hooked on pills and pain pills and shit like that, you know.
And you also don't have, to worry about being the one who's selling tickets. And if you're not drawing, you're not performing, you're not making money.
Right.
Is, you know, like if you're doing a great job and you know, you're going to make money, you're going to continue to do, but you don't have to be the one who's responsible for the draw. And I does that give you a different sense of,
yeah, well, that's the thing though, always when we learn, Isaac, is, you know, back in the day, that's the things that Chief J. Strombo, Gorilla Monsoon, referees don't sell tickets. They comp tickets. That's what we do. That was my best motto. I love that too. It's, they always said, you know, as the old school, like Pat Patterson, Gorilla Monsoon, and Chief J. Strombo, Rene Goulet, Jack Lanza, all the agents I was growing up to at that time in my career, Grizzly Smith, they always said, man, he said, if the less the referee is noticed, you know, the more the referee is doing his job. And that's, you know, it really is. It is true. It is true. And I've learned that throughout my career, you know, and you take a lot of, and that's what I did, man. I took a lot of wisdom, words of wisdom from Gorilla Monsoon and not old school. And I was coming up from the best era, from the 80s to the 90s to the Attitude Era. It's just, you know, it's I don't think we'll ever get those kind of years back. In the
business. And I mean, so the changes over those decades too. I mean, when you first get into the business as a referee, I mean, even, right. You know, when you're first on TV, I mean, how different was it from even late 90s, early 2000s?
It was a big difference because here you went into, like, you know, I just gave away, I found a bunch of posters, man, in 1997, you know, with Brett and Taker were going at it, you know, a lot of stuff. And I got some stuff from Brett and Brett over. It's like some pictures where Brett, I'm in the ring, we're in South Africa. It was like 1997, right before the screw job was coming up, you know? So, and it was like, God, I look at this. It was a front page of an article of Cape Town, South Africa. It's probably right here with a light shining on it. Like, let me see.
Yeah.
My camera. It's right in the back to my left. But and at the time, and you had Taker and Brett working together. Then Brett didn't like the way the business was going in the Attitude Era. He didn't like it for his kids. He had, you know, he had a lot of kids at that time. He didn't like it, you know, watching kids. He didn't like to portray that kind of stuff on TV where Shawn Michaels was going to be their rising star. You know what I'm saying? So, and we had so much freaking talent back then, man. You got to think Stone Cold fucking Steve Austin, this one race. I mean,
it was, no, the roster. I mean,
the roster was just stacked.
You think about the mid-carders
right.
of that era, and you're like, right.
Yeah.
This guy's like D'Lo Brown and shit.
Right.
Those guys are incredible.
Right. I mean, you had a stacked card all the way through the show, yeah. You know? So, I mean, going through that era, just seeing the way the era changed and, you know, then they fucked over Brett. Brett got screwed, you know, whatever. And it kind of sucked for Brett because he went on to WCW and they really didn't do much with him, man. He didn't last long there in his career.
They dropped the ball. I mean, they should have had him on the next fucking week.
Right. I mean, I think.
Or the next night.
15 years with the WWF back then, you know, WWE when he was screwed over, and I know it's at least 15 years.
Yeah, it's been a long run.
Yeah, because I mean, I know him for like a 12 years at that point, you know, or something when, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, because we actually just we're reviewing the pay-per-views from 97, and we just did the Canadian Stampede.
Right.
And, you know, fantastic show, but right. You know, the way it right. ends, you know, is like such a bittersweet moment, you know, going back and watching it with the whole Hart family in there, you know, and knowing that, like, you know, within a month things just start falling apart, and it's, you know, like it was really nice to see, but at the same time you're like, fuck.
Yeah, it was brutal because, you know, he was a guy that, and then what happened to Owen not too long after that, you know, it was just all went down to shits. But then you know, then going into the Attitude Era, you had The Rock, Stone Cold, No, even going into after like 9/11, 2002, when we had WrestleMania in Toronto Sky Dome with Rock and Hogan, that was fucking absolutely phenomenal. Yet icon against icon.
Yeah.
You know, fucking Hogan basically passes the fucking torch. So, well, in the beginning, you would have Hogan getting the torch pass from Andre the Giant, which Joey was the referee. A very big match there he did. And then you had finally Hogan passing the torch to The Rock. You know, against another icon, and then fucking Rock takes the torch, and then he takes off to Hollywood. Pretty much after that.
Yeah, like he sort of came back and gave it to Cena, but I mean, it didn't really.
No, he went over on Cena the first time.
The first time, and then I guess then he ripped then he ripped his pectoral muscle off.
Well, yeah, right. Well, he because Cena was fucking buttered. I had that first one, you know. And Rock was going over, and I was wondering who the fuck was going to go over. Cena had been running the road for 10 years. Rock's been fucking in Hollywood, you know, and then all of a sudden they say, oh, John, you got to do the job.
And they built that one for – that was the one they built for a year.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it was in Miami.
Yeah.
I think that one was in Miami.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, it just – I said, damn. I said, I can't believe it. I said, damn, they gave it to The Rock. And I love The Rock, don't get me wrong. Felt bad for Cena. You know, he had it, you know, because I knew he was kind of pussy, like sourpussed about it, you know. And he's busting his ass for a decade. Why?
Yeah. You know, I mean, that was the thing about that, the whole build for that is that what Cena was doing always felt authentic. You know, the shit he was saying.
Right.
You could tell there was some anger and some resentment there.
Right. Right.
Because
promos,
because you know, like obviously it was, you know, like the best stuff is always a little real. You know?
Yeah. I mean it was. And then, you know, and it's like, okay, then they set the second one up, and then of course you're gonna know Cena's gonna get it back. And it's like that was kind of like you know. But and you know, it's and then like and believe me, Rock was a star, but he wasn't as big as a star then as he is now.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. I mean, yeah, not even close.
And I mean, Brock's fucking twice the size. I mean, he's fucking jacked.
It's insane how big he is,
bro. He works out to that. Oh, yeah. You know, and I'm sure, you know, whatever. But
Brock is another big motherfucker too.
Hell yeah, hell yeah.
I mean, I remember his match against Angle, where you know he does the shooting star press, and you know, like. Oh. And like anyone else is their neck is broken and he just bounced.
he was fucked up though, man.
He
was dazed. His eyes were so red.
He was gone.
He's glazed. And
like just having a neck the size of a truck tire.
That's what saved him.
Yeah,
that's what literally saved him. His traps probably and all that stuff, man. Yeah. Because man, bro, he's athletic as can be, man. He is athletic, and I know he can come off. I've seen him do that finish so many times. You know, he didn't do it every week or every – he only
pulled up,
but when he did, he executed that son of a bitch. But I knew when Angle was out that far, I was going, holy fuck. And I'm thinking, hope he's going to get him here, you know, and he didn't, man. It was just like, man. I thought he almost broke his neck at that point.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, that must have been
– yeah.
It must have been a scary moment for you, and I'm sure whoever's in your ear at that point is, and all credit to both Angle and Lesnar for being able to pull out that F5 and make it look
decent.
Yeah, I mean, like the fact that Lesnar was able to even stand up.
I know, bro, strong dude, man.
But I'm curious, going sort of talking again about, you know, early in the business and being a ref. I mean, is it at that point, and I don't know if it's still like this so much, at least in WWE, but was there like in MLB and like in baseball, is there like a separation of the referees from the wrestlers? In any time where you would be seen by anybody who wasn't in the business? Or is that
like
not...
What do you mean, like the referees being separate? Like,
yeah, like with baseball, like the umpires and the players aren't allowed to like associate for
travel,
travel together, be like hang out together because of all the
drinking beers,
the scandals. And I'm just was curious if, you know, to help protect, you know, the business as a whole, it used to be that the, you know, the heels and the faces weren't allowed to be seen together. And I was just curious if there was anything like that with the referees, whereas like the refs travel together, they don't, they're not seen at the bars with the boys, like things like that, or if it was a lot looser.
No, it was, we mixed up a lot. I mean, the only thing they didn't want us doing, you know, it's like when you as a referee, the boys can get out and get fucked up out of control. But when the ref, one of the referees got fucked up out of control, you got more heat. You know what I'm saying? Because they always considered the refs not one of the boys, you know?
Yep.
But I used to travel with wrestlers my whole life. I mean, it was Tony Chimmel in the truck for many, many years, 20-something years.
Yep.
And then right before Jim Ross left, you know, he made me definitely the head referee and stuff like that. So, and that was awesome. And, you know, they were moving me up. And then Earl moved. I was kind of, you know, I still was doing great matches, even in my younger career, because I was getting asked for and I was called in for talent, from production, you know, because your referees are made up and they ask the talent, who do you want as your referee? Who do you want this? So a lot of, and, you know, they would put me in like Michael Hayes, production guy. I mean, he's the head, you know, man, and certain, you know, people that did that stuff in pay-per-views or, you know, it was to the talent, mostly the talent would appoint me to these matches.
That's
and
cool.
Say, we want Kyoto, like Rock and Hogan. Rock wanted me to do his match. Hogan was like, hell yeah, I'd love Coyote to do my match. He was like, you know, so, I mean, it's pretty damn cool. I mean, it's
that's,
cool.
Yeah,
it's
I mean, feeling. Is there any higher, you know, show of respect to have?
Yeah.
You know, what, like you were saying at the beginning, you know, like Hogan being one of the guys who like was drew you into this business in the first place. Being
I mean, he sure did because like, you know, he was selling out houses left and right, you know, and he was, you know, he was doing a cartoon. He was on TV all the time, you know,
he was huge.
You know, it was like, dude, I've never seen little kids used to cry and through the barricades when we used to have the regular bicycle barricades. Kids and little kids would be tearing when he's selling, and that's all really Hogan did was sell, and then he'd come back with about 3 or 4 or 5 moves, right?
Drop
and
the leg,
you know, a couple punches, this, whatever, throw you in a rope, drop the leg, you know, hit the leg or the boot. It's just, but it was fun shit, and it was just, it was awesome. I mean, Hogan, we always, you know, knew Hogan was over in the north, and a lot of places in the south, it was always Ric Flair, you know.
Yep.
So that was a competition there, you know.
So I can imagine.
Relating to the wrestlers asking for different refs for different matches and all, watching these 1997 matches and to a lesser extent AEW now, it seems like the refs have a little discretion to go not as strict with the rules. Is that told to you or was that truly your opinion at that moment?
No, they're AEW. We're comparing AEW WWE pretty much. I mean, AEW's rules with the refs. I can't. It's hard for me to watch it. I want to watch it because you want to definitely want to see CM Punk. I'm going to be out in Chicago coming up soon. You know, that weekend with pay per view with AEW. So I got some podcasts out there going on with ad free, and then so I'll be at the show too Sunday backstage. So anyway, but AEW, I think, is starting to boom, man, you know, and they're starting to build a roster where with AEW, you got the referees are just not doing shit. I want to go back to referees because, you know, I watch the show and it's just hard to watch as a referee when we're sitting there and you're just acknowledging the tag in, but you're not acknowledging the 5 count out of the corner. You're not the 5 count off the ropes and not even acknowledging the 10 counts pretty much, really. It's basically count a false finish or count the finish and just make the acknowledgement to a tag. I've seen a couple bumps over there. A couple of the guys at AEW took the referees and it was like, oh my God, it just looked, it's hard to watch that show with the referees, you know? And Aubrey does a great job. She does a great job. She sells every little motion. You know what I'm saying? If you watch her, she sells every little spot, every little, it's just, to me now, when I'm watching a match, I'm watching Aubrey because she's so much all over the place, you know, and I'm like, God, this girl's got so much talent. She can, you know, just if she didn't sell every little bit, you know, but referee, just try not to be so much of a character in the ring, you know. So, and that's what we did in WWE. We made it where, you know, you had rules. The only thing I didn't like is when Vince cut our fucking names off, you know, and he heard some referee's name years ago, man, on the just being announced on the commentating, and he said, "Who the fuck is this guy?" And they said, "It's the referee, Vince." "Well, why the fuck am I hearing his fucking name? God damn it." You know, he's like, "That's it. I don't want to hear any more fucking referees' names." And I'm like, "What?" But they'd still plug my name once in a while.
But, yeah. But the Royal Ads. But then stopped. They would do the shit like they did to fucking poor Tim White with that fucking.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. That suicide storyline and shit. And it's
just, I know.
The poor guy fucking literally, like, basically broke himself for them.
He did. I love Tim White, man. He's a great guy.
Shane, you were talking before about something that's similar to this, though, in the idea of having referees that are basically becoming famous.
Yeah. So you've got referees like Red Shoes over in New Japan and Aubrey, obviously AEW,
right?
You know, Earl, whatever. You know, referees that like everyone knows their name, yourself included. And sometimes you get, sometimes you start watching, like you said earlier with Aubrey, you know, these referees, kind of more than the match. And I think you already answered it earlier. Your job as a referee is to do less and do more and be noticed less, I guess.
Yeah, I mean,
is there a situation when it's kind of cool when like a referee is more noticed? Like,
it is cool because I didn't mean to cut you off, Shane. Hold on. Are you finished or?
Oh, no, I said all good, man.
Sorry. Yeah. Like it's really cool. And you know, like, I don't know if you ever heard of it. Like, you know, they start the Mike Chioda chant at TV sometimes. And they started that after WrestleMania. Fuck, that was so fucking cool. Randy Orton, I remember at the Meadowlands. It was right after WrestleMania. The European crowd was there, most of them. And they start chanting. They always chant. And they fucking come up with new shit. And then it sticks on TV for a while, you know? So they came up. And then Randy Orton and Sheamus were fucking wrestling. And fucking two baby faces.
God,
they got bored of the match. And they started chanting my name.
That was such fucking a great moment.
Randy just looked at me. He's like, "What the fuck?" And I'm like, "Dude, I don't know. I'm like, is this a Jersey crowd?" Where I'm like, "This is my hometown." I'm like, "I think it's a fucking European crowd."
That was that was such a fun show. And I mean, it was just like,
yeah,
I feel like that was like the first Raw after WrestleMania where the crowd really just hijacked the show. The whole
That was London's the Fandango always... Raw after.
Yeah. So I mean, that was pretty cool because like Randy thought it was because I was from Jersey, which you know Meadowlands is 15-20 minutes from Bayonne. He always knew that, you know. I lived close there, and he's like, "What the fuck? Is this your hometown? You got all these comp tickets out." And I'm like, "Dude, I don't fucking know, but I'm loving it." But like, I couldn't tell it. I couldn't acknowledge a crowd really because I didn't want to keep chanting it. And Vince would probably been pissed. But everybody popped them in the back, like Vince and everybody. It was just, but it's a good moment to be recognized. And, you know, and they're building Aubrey and doing a great job with her because that's Chris Jericho's referee, you know.
Yeah.
And I wish I was at AEW right now training these guys, you know. So
they need some training.
I know I could help, you know.
I feel
do they have someone for that? Like,
no, bro.
Wow.
No, I mean, which referee you can tell me you think that's training another referee there? Like, there's no other referees. Cody wanted to be strong, and there was a lot of guys pushing for me. Taz, Jim Ross, this one. A ton of guys. I couldn't go down a list of guys or Jake Hager. That's like travel with good friends. And
yeah.
A lot of guys are like, and just Tony Khan's not high on referees, bro. I mean, he didn't want me there to train him. Like Cody wanted me to do a lot of pay-per-views, you know, and stuff like that. And I know he was high on a hog, but somebody ex-nated after like three shows. That was it.
It adds something to a big match to have a ref that is well known and,
right,
it's a highlight,
right? And that's what Cody wanted. Cody wanted that. I know that.
I mean, there's a reason why, you know, like in New Japan, Red Shoes is doing the big matches, you know, like,
right?
Or you know, Earl Hebner is doing those, or you're doing them, you know, like,
right?
it adds, and I think that's the thing is, you know, like if the thing about a good referee and getting back to that is, you know, you're what you're doing is so much more than what you actually make it look like you're doing.
Right.
And you know, I think a lot of people don't fully understand. Can you just talk a little bit about, especially in the production, the TV production era where, mm-hmm. you know, you have, you know, a whole van, you know, a whole truck full of people, you have a, you know, a gang of people at Gorilla. What is your role? What is going, you know, like from the time, you know, you get out to that ring and the introductions go, what's going into your ear? What do you have to be worried about? Yeah. And like, what are your roles in during that whole section other than counting to three and reacting to stuff, you know, and being the referee, because right. it's so much more than just that part of it.
Right. There's a ton for a referee to do as you're going in. You have to hold, you should know the whole, if it's an important long match, okay, you should know everything in that match. You know, if it's a 30, 25, 30 minute match, 35 minute match or more, you got to know a lot of shit. You got to know false finishes, heat spots. You know, you got to give cues, certain cues. You got to give times going into breaks on live TVs. You got to give time and stuff and cues and tell them we're 2 minute commercial, pitcher, do this. We're coming back fucking live. We're coming back. Okay. 5 seconds, 5, 4. And then they'll start getting back up out of a hold, coming back up on live TV. Okay. We're back. And you know, we action, you know, and like, we got to get right into action again. There's a lot of things that you're passing on, simple cues to the boys coming from fucking Gorilla. Cause Billy's in your ear, the agent's in your ear, like, over the IFB, and then, you know, Vince is into the Billy Kidman's ear, and then he's into my ear, but then I'm, you know, one, and then the boys, one of the boys may be calling a spot to me verbally, then I got to pass it on to him, you know, change a spot up, do this, do that, you know, whether it's a hip toss, do this, or drop kick me when I come here, when I turn around, tell him that, you know, it's just referees, and then you got to figure out, like, then you got to worry about if you have to take a bump in that match. You got to be there at the right time, the right spot, the right placement. And it's got to look good, because if it looks like shit, it really kills a fucking match when a referee takes a shitty bump. Or like when a guy whiffs him and he takes the bump anyway. Oh, yeah. I've seen that on TV. I went, oh. I've
seen that. Speaking of which, honestly, what's your opinion of the ref bump? And like you get knocked over the ring and then you have to lay there for... Four minutes.
4, 5, 6, 20, yeah.
40 minutes.
Yeah, it seems like a lifetime, man. It's just, and it's weird because, and every bump is different because you'll take, if you have to come back in a few minutes or 5 minutes to finish the match, you're not going to take a very heavy bump from a wrestler. If it's something really bad, it should put you out for the rest of the night. You know, then another referee might come down or he may come back at the end. But, you know, it's a lot of different situations, you know, going into taking a bump, how you're going to referee's going to, if he's going to get thrown over the top rope, he's not coming back. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Into that match. It's just too big of a bump for a ref to come back.
Yeah.
So there's got to be certain little bumps that you take, but I mean, you know, over my career, he's taken many, many bumps, you know, and you just got to make sure it looks good, man, because it's a lot of stress on you, because if it don't, the referee looks like shit. And if it's the referee's fault, you know, you're really up to shit's creek. You know, you fucked up your one little spot you had, you know.
Yeah.
These guys got 30 minutes of spots, 40 minutes of spots, and you fuck up one bump. You know what I'm saying?
I was watching the invasion angle match that you had, your 3-on-3 match with Rock and Jericho with the Dudleys and Nick Patrick.
Yeah.
And you took a fucking bump from
Bubba. Oh, he, Bubba ripped my
Jesus,
brother. That's a story behind that, man. There's a story behind that.
What did you do to that man?
Didn't do fucking anything. Bubba's like all day. Him and Devon. I love Bubba and Devon. You know, funny fucking guys. But Bubba's like Kyoto. He was like, you don't sell that fucking clothesline. And if you notice, I fucking sold that shoulder all the way through.
Like, you did. No, you were even when you were trying to get up to get.
I know. I I'm sitting there selling it too fucking much, worried about because he ripped my fucking head off, made it look great. And that's the thing, too. He goes, I'm gonna try and bring that clothesline. Just be careful because I don't want to catch you on your fucking, you know, and I don't want to break your teeth or nothing. So don't, you know, don't cringe on me too much, you know? So we're going over and I'm like, that's cool, man. He's like, you mind if I put it in a little bit? I said, no, fuck no, not at all. I mean, that's where you, I wanted. What am I going to say? No, don't fucking lay it in.
Don't you dare.
Yeah, these guys are putting fucking boys through the table left and right, and women and everything else back in them days.
May Young.
Oh yeah, remember that?
Yeah, I mean, if May Young's gonna take that table bump, and
what are you gonna say as a referee?
You can't say no.
Take that fucking bump.
No, not a chance.
You want to eat? No.
Yeah, you're gonna get hit twice as hard.
So I sold that motherfucker all the way back, and then Bubba's like, "Great fucking bump, bro." Great. He goes, "Dude, you oversold that fucking clothesline. You had to sell it that long." I'm like,
"Who's selling?"
Okay, I'm like, "Okay." I'm like,
"That actually hurt."
I was like, "Yeah, it did. No, it did. It did fucking hurt, my dude. It did. He did bring it, man."
Was that a fun match for you,
brother? It's funny. I was just at the car dealership the other day. The salesman kid comes running up. He's like, "Yo, are you Mike Chioda?" I'm like, "Yeah." It's like, "Damn, you got a pretty good fucking eye, bro." And he's like, "Oh man, I've been watching you. Thank you for all the years when I was a kid, man. Watching you, man. Growing up watching you all the years." And he goes, "This is my favorite match for you," and it was that match right there.
It was fun.
Me and my wife were like, "Holy shit!" We were like, "Look at this kid, like, good eye." I mean, he kind of see me in through the front windshield, you know. And I never even the kid just started the job there. I didn't even know him.
That's so impressive. Yeah, I posted on Nick Patrick's Facebook today.
Oh, did
and
you?
I was like, I'm gonna be, you know, talking to you. I'm going to ask about this match. Do you have any memories from the match? And this is his response, and I'm going to quote him. He says, "Isaac, other than me whipping everyone, not really."
Well, if you talk to him again, tell him thanks for doing the job for me, man. Yeah. I always appreciate it, man, because I know I was stiff on my shit.
What was working with Nick like? He seems like a cool dude, cat.
Man. Yeah, he is. He was always a cool, laid-back dude, man.
Yeah.
So he was really cool. And I just had a podcast earlier tonight, and his name got brought up, but we were talking about him, you know. And
yeah,
somebody had asked a question like, "What referee could you have worked with more? Would you have liked to work with more?" I said, besides Joey Morella, you know, probably Nick Patrick. He was one of them we talked about. And I said, you know, Nick's a cool guy, always laid back.
Yeah.
Now, why did he ever leave the company? I couldn't remember.
I don't know what happened there, to be honest.
I didn't get it. You know, I didn't get it. I can't. I'm trying to rack my brain. I got to ask somebody why he left, like Charles Robinson or somebody. Yeah. But I don't know. What has he been doing? Anything or?
Not that. I mean, I think he's from his Facebook. He's just, you know, just going and posting old stuff. I know Jody just passed away. So I think that's been sort of a lot of posts about memories of Jody, but.
Gotcha.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, what a legendary family. Yeah. I mean, it's cool to see that kind of, like, you know, with a match with a guy who spent, you know, so long in WCW and was such an influential ref there,
and
part of so many great stories.
Yeah, yeah, they were very involved.
What's that? Yeah.
I just said very involved. Like Nick Patrick was on the show itself.
Right. Good.
Yeah. I mean, he was such a character in WCW. And I think it was like, probably one of the first times that, you know, that the referee really became like a central figure.
Yeah.
More than just like, you know, the guy who was officiating the match, but.
Oh yeah. That's the same thing when Earl came in. David Hebner used to referee a lot, you know, for us. We first, you know, when I was, you know, refereeing when I was young. And then Earl came and did that switch with Hogan, you know, that switch with Dave Hebner, and you know, the thing with Hogan, man. That was that blew off the roof, you know, on Saturday Night Event, man. So that was cool.
Yeah, very cool.
But you know, and I mean we, you know, and like I said, like Joey Morella did some really cool matches. He's done the Hulk Hogan, you know, Andre the Giant match. He's done the Bret the Hitman Hart and Davey Boy 92 in SummerSlam in fucking
London, my God,
the stadium. That was badass.
Yeah.
You know, So it's
especially just, considering the state that Davey Boy was in for that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So I mean, you know, it's good. Like, you know, in all the matches with the ring collapse and that I've done with, you know, Big Show and Brock Lesnar and shit like that. And all I had to do was sell. That's just sell my look. Like, what the fuck just happened? And they loved it backstage.
Gorilla that Lesnar. Was, yeah. A great out there. Great moment.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like... and the Rock and Hogan match and just a lot of member icon matches I've done.
Over you've here. Done, yeah. I mean, you've main evented more than three WrestleManias or something? Four WrestleManias?
Oh, we have like more than that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of main events for that. Yeah. And... yeah. Do you have a favorite? Do you have a favorite match that you refereed?
I mean, you know, like certain matches for different ways, like, you know, certain matches for technical, like I gotta say Rock and Hogan, Icon against Icon was one of the best matches ever, because working with Hogan throughout all those years, then he went WCW and then came back. I have to say Icon with him.
Yeah,
you know, there's many matches with John Cena I've done with, and you know, title matches and stuff over the years, but I mean, it's got to be Rock Hogan first, Kurt Angle, Shane McMahon is one of my most memorable matches too.
Yes, that was a
great match. You know,
are we talking King of the Ring?
Yeah, it was King of the Ring. I think it was.
There. Yeah,
that was in the Meadowlands. That was actually the Meadowlands too. Yeah.
Did you almost get fired for that? Did Vince almost murder you? Like,
Vince was fucking hot.
Jesus Christ,
brother. Man. So I was on Kurt's right side, and the glass didn't break the first time, you know. And Shane, man, you know, Shane had a lot to prove, you know. And me and Shane, you know, Shane went on the road with us for, we became very good friends in the business. You know, and Shane had went on the road for a year with Tony Chimalai after he got out of college to learn everything about the ring, you know, from the driving the trucks. He went with us on the road driving the trucks, fucking to every town, setting up the ring, tearing it down, doing all the shit work. Because his dad wanted him to know everything from the bottom all the way up to the top. How I refereed, how Tony rang announced, how this got set up, how it worked.
Yeah, I mean, I even remember he started, you know, on TV, on commentary.
Right, right. And, you know, so, you know, going through all that with Shane, and that night, it was fucking, he had so much to prove with Kurt Angle. And here's this tough sum of bits, and Kurt was young and fucking in his prime. And Shane's a big boy and thick and strong, man. And he fucking kicked ass in that match. But the second time he tried to put him through, Vince was screaming, don't fucking do it again, tell him not to fucking, they kept screaming in my ear, and I'm screaming, and they know I was screaming at Kurt, don't fucking do it, Kurt, and I'm on Kurt's, I think, right side of his ear, and I got back, and fucking Vince is pissed, but Shane was fine, he had glass to his hair, he had a lot of glass in his head still.
And a little concussion.
Concussion, I think he had, Yeah, he just, bro, it wasn't, that was just the one spot. I mean, Kurt fucking put him through the ring of that match, you know.
Well, and that was the thing, is like that match, I mean, for both of those guys, really like changed the trajectory of their careers. You know, like Kurt Angle wasn't, like, no one looked at him up until that point as like that badass and that tough, and no one you know, like, really had looked at Shane as being as like tough as he was up until that point.
Yeah,
and both of them, I mean, came out looking,
well, Shane came out looking better, man, even though he jobs, you know, I'm saying, like,
oh, 100%,
you know, he got over more, I think, than ever after that match. Mm-hmm. He was starting to really get pushed, you know, big time.
He went toe to toe with the fucking guy who won a gold medal with a broken freaking neck.
Look, right, and
he never should have stood a chance. I mean, it was a great story, a great match,
great match, great story. So I mean, and I told Curtis, Kurt, man, what the fuck is your eye, bro? Did you not hear me, man? That they didn't want you to put him. He goes, I was wondering what you're saying. I can't hear out of that side of the ear. And I'm like, what? I'm like, I never knew you can't. He goes, yeah, it's always been like that, Kyoto. I'm sorry, man. I was like, he's like, is he okay? I'm like, yeah, Shane's fine. I'm like, oh, shit, bro. I didn't know you couldn't hear out of that ear. I was wondering why. Why the fuck you're ignoring me, you know? I was like, it was coming from Vince. Vince is saying, no don't fucking do it. This is coming from fucking Vince. You know, and I'm acting like I'm yelling at him because I really am. I was fucking definitely. Usually you're yelling at him, you act like you're yelling at him, but you're giving him cues.
Yeah.
You're giving him this time to do this. Yeah, I was really fucking shooting on that one. That's for sure. That was a shoot.
This makes me think. So they had, I think it was during the COVID, they had that match where was it Brock Lesnar and what was the one where they handcuffed?
Roman
Reigns.
Kevin Owens.
And Kevin Owens, yeah. Roman, Kevin Owens, yeah. And gotcha. And they botched the key thing, and it was a last man standing match, right?
And they just stopped the 10 count.
They just stopped the 10 count.
I did?
No, not you. No. This was I think
last year.
Yeah, this was last year, probably after your release, but it was just like a really weird moment. And I'm curious, like, as a referee, I know that like if something goes wrong, you're supposed to count to three, right?
So who would have went over, Roman or
Roman ended up going over, but he was handcuffed and
he was handcuffed.
So Paulie couldn't figure out how to work the key, and nobody thought to knock out the second ref they had already brought in.
Oh no, shit! I was sorry. So he started
counting, and then like at five, just disappeared. The count stopped.
That's because there was going to be a title switch then.
Yeah,
Roman had the title, and Kevin Owens would have won it on that. And it was one of those things because, like, you know, like if it was a pinfall and it was an accident,
that's too bad. It's too late. It's too bad. Yeah. If you counted to three, you can't change the finish. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But I mean, you can even work with something like that. That should have been like, and I'm surprised because they want the fucking referees to shoot like it's a shoot because
exactly
it just makes it more fucking real, you know. But if I didn't see that. How come I didn't hear about that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I remember it disappeared really quickly, but everyone was talking about it for a minute. Really? But I just remember it was just like it was a great match.
It was on whatever pay per view was around. Was it
Extreme Rules or something?
It might have been Extreme Rules. It was while they were in Tropicana.
I got to Google that, man. I got
it was right around when AEW did the Stadium Stampede for this year.
So Charles would have done the match, right?
Let me.
It's tough because they were on ref number two by this point. They had already knocked out the first one.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. If Charles did they save him to run in, or did they save the? Have Charles do the title match, and then I gotta go. Yeah, I gotta check that out.
I wish I remembered off the top of my head, but at this moment, I can't remember who was reffing that, or if it was somebody I even know by the second ref point.
Wow!
But
I can't.
It stood out because it is always done like a shoot.
Well, you're right, and you know how smart our fans are. You know, everybody's smart to the business, so it's not like who are you gonna fool. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
completely.
And the referee was trying to open the key, or one of them.
Paul Heyman, I think, was trying to unlock the keys.
Okay,
and couldn't do it.
But they had Roman was in a really weird position, couldn't get the key in the lock for the handcuffs because it was to a piece of rigging.
So is he slow on his count too? Like one, or is he fast on his count?
I think he was a bit slow trying to.
Give him time.
Thinking he's still going to get him out, and it was a good like 25 seconds till
what? Ah, oh, that's
yeah.
He finally got him
forever.
No shit.
Yeah, I want to try and find who is actually officiating that one.
Damn,
Isaac looks that up. I have the most irrelevant question of the day.
Yeah, what's up, Dozer?
Sauce or gravy?
Sauce or gravy?
You're from Jersey. Italians either have red sauce or gravy.
Oh, sauce and gravy. I'm sorry. Shit. We have gravy.
Okay. I'm a sauce family, so.
Yeah. And then, you know what? That's, you know, it's funny because I'm half Italian, quarter Polish, quarter Lithuanian. So my family's, you know, some of my Italian family in the Canzano side, you know, they used to call it sauce. This one called it gravy. It's real weird with that. But yeah, I love some gravy or some sauce over some squingeal galamad and all that other stuff.
Ooh, that, sure. That sounds good.
Oh, God.
What the delicious. Hell does that mean?
he's from Ohio.
Yeah, I live in Columbus, Ohio.
They put fucking, yeah, they put chili on spaghetti there.
I know.
I'm curious as the difference in just like the production and what goes on in house shows versus TV production, as far as like whether you have as much going on in your ear, if it's a lot, yeah, just sort of like go and do your thing, and like it's more to
live events are so much cooler, bro. I mean, it's just because the stressful point about doing the main events too, for all the years I've done them on Monday Night Raw, on SmackDown, is you're going off the air. See, now it's like, and you still, when you're on Monday Night Raw and SmackDown, you know, you still got to hit your cue for going off the air. That's the most stressful fucking thing. Live events, man, you go out and you work four sides of the ring as a referee, have fun, a lot better, because TV's a referee only works three sides of the ring, if you ever noticed that. A referee should never turn their back or work in front of the ring at the front of the hard camera. That's a no-no. So you have to work three sides of the ring and never cross the hard camera in front of the talent with your back to the hard camera. So, but live events are so much, they're a lot more fun. You have, you know, TVs, you're there from fucking like 11 to 12 to 12 midnight, 11:30 sometimes, you know? So you're the first ones, you know, to get there early and you're leaving early. So you go there, you take your drug test sometimes, you go to catering, you go over your matches, the production meeting comes out, whatever, you know. So TVs are long days, especially when we used to do like Sunday pay-per-view, Monday,
yeah,
Raw, Tuesday SmackDown tapings. But now it's a little different. So now it's just like TV on Friday, do a house show Saturday and Sunday, go home, you know?
Yeah.
So in the house shows, live events are going to go away, I'm pretty sure, so at some
point. Yeah. And was the, because I know like basically for a long while, you know, they were pre-taping all the SmackDowns. Was it a little bit less intensive a vibe as far as that goes compared to like Monday Night Raw, the pay-per-views, or was it still like the same intensity level?
I'd have to say at some point in the years when Rock had SmackDown and so forth with other things and with other talent, SmackDown was definitely a lot less. They put more money and more push into Raw. You know, yeah. Raw was our baby. Raw is Vince's baby.
Yeah,
that's what he's, you know, always heard, because sometimes Vince would just be at Raw and he wouldn't even be at SmackDown. You know, so what does that tell you? You know, yeah. So I mean, you know, Raw had the most boom boom with the fireworks in the beginning and all that stuff, and you know, the grand entrance opening up the show, you know, with Raw. And then SmackDown had a very smaller entrance, you know, not as big stage, not as a big, you know. So, I mean,
it was truly set up like a B show.
Exactly. Yeah. Of the TVs, you know.
Yes.
Of the TVs.
So. But speaking of obscure TV shows, how was refereeing Shotgun Saturday Night in those weird venues?
I fucking miss that, man. God, you want to talk about getting fondled? Shit, man, these broads used to grab your balls, your ass, and shit.
Oh, fuck yes, dude.
I'm like, what the
hell
fuck?
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, what the fuck? I'm like, I'm getting fucking grabbed on my ass and my fucking crotch. And I'm like, you know, I'm laughing with the boys. We start the show. This is how fucking funny this was. It was in, you know, of course, in New York City, Webster Hall, and we used to do these other shows and in them towns. All the cool fucking nightclubs. So back in the day. And then, so we used to be there like fucking early. So they'd say, you got to set the ring up early by 3 o'clock. And then the bar doesn't close till like fucking 4 or 5 in the morning in New York. So we couldn't start tearing down till like 6 in the morning. So like, fucking half the time, boy, I'd be fucked up by like 3 o'clock, because the show went from like 12 to 1. Yeah. And we go out and start drinking and shit like that. And then we're like, holy fuck. And we already had to drive it back about an hour and a half back to South Jersey. Like, fucking.
Oh, shit.
But yeah.
When I lived in New York, it was very easy. I would get out of work.
Yeah.
You know, in the restaurants, 1 o'clock, 2 a.m. And
yeah.
You could drink till the sun came up, man. It was easy. Yeah.
And I mean, Carmine's was cool too, man. Carmine's, an Italian place over there. It was a good place to eat in the city. But we used to go to Scores a lot, man, too, back in the day.
Scores was the place. I remember as a kid listening to Howard Stern in the morning and being like, I want to live at Scores when I grow up. I was like, this sounds like the most amazing place in the whole universe.
I want to tell you a quick story coming home from Scores. I live in South Jersey. I actually lived in Burlington, which was next to Willingboro, and I built another house in Burlington. And so I'm coming home from Scores, man. It must have been about exit 9 or 9A or something. I had to take like exit 5, you know, so I'm on a Jersey Turnpike going south. I was so fucked up, bro. I get pulled over, and I had my TNT fucking World Wrestling Federation jacket on. I get out of step out of the car. All I remember is just fucking like kind of stumbling into the fucking second lane of the turnpike. Kind of like stumbled in the first lane, boom, boom, tripped and fell. These state troopers, now this is Jersey state troopers. I'm not, if you know, these guys are dressed like fucking military all the time.
Yeah, oh yeah. They got the jack boots and everything.
Next thing I know, I fucking woke up at some hotel up the next exit. My car's impounded. And I got no tickets with me, but my luggage is with me. I'm in a fucking hotel room. And then I have a fucking card, and there's a note saying, call, what was it, Clem? Sergeant Trooper Clem. And yes. Fuck, hold on. The other guy was a Polack. I know that because I'm part Polish. Clem and fucking somebody else.
Clem
they knew the
sheriff's name.
We know this is state troopers now, bro. I thought I was waking up in jail because I woke up and I'm like, what the fuck am I doing in a hotel? I'm like, the last thing I kind of know is getting pulled over and fucking next thing you know, man, they didn't give me no tickets. They were big fans. They knew who I was. You know, they loved wrestling and fucking no tickets. And then I go get my fucking car from impound and they said the state paid it. The state paid for the fucking hotel room. I come down to check out. I'm like, I called this place where my car was, you know, and I called them guys the next fucking day. And I said, man, thank you very much. Yeah. I wound up sending them a box of t-shirts. They got tickets for me for like years.
Jersey don't pay for shit. So yeah. Hey,
brother, right? So I hate
Yeah, probably the only other time those guys got paid is when Christie paid him to shut down the fucking bridge.
right? Ain't that the fucking truth? But, you know, I can't remember that. I always remember his other name, too. But, yeah, man, they had free tickets for a long time, man. Yeah, I just couldn't believe it. I'm thinking all the times I've gotten in trouble as a kid, and I couldn't have fucked up more that night.
Right.
And this was like 4 or 5 in the morning, 4:30 in the morning, you know, because the show gets over at 11, you know, by the time we were at school, we were drinking there for 3 or 4 hours, and fuck, I'm going home, you know?
Someone's looking out for you, man. was there like one match that you really wish you could have refereed that you had to watch?
Yeah, most definitely, man. I definitely wish, you know, Charles Robinson had this match, and this was the first match and setup between Undertaker and Shawn Michaels. The first one.
Yep.
I really wish I could have done that match.
It's a great first match. One. Yeah,
you know, I do say I wish I could have done the match Joey did with Bulldog and, Birthday of Man Hart with 82,000 people in London. So,
right.
Cause those fans were nuts, man. They were fucking nuts during that, the horns and, half yeah. three and 40,000 people going hit man, having the horns were going off on the other side and going Bulldog. It was fucking intense, man. That's, you know, awesome. So, but yeah, I'd say those two matches at least, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a Is there a match that you remember doing that you're like, I really wish I was not associated with that one at all? And be like, man, I hope they scrubbed that one off of Peacock.
Yeah. It's probably a match. God, it was, who was it? I think it was in Long Island, that Coliseum. The girls, it was kind of a girls' night pay-per-view. They worked hard and everything. I think it was Becky Lynch and Charlotte. And it was kind of like, fuck, they caught me doing everything, moving a chair over to fucking Becky, you know, because she was selling real hard.
Talk about Evolution, right?
Yeah.
All women, yep.
Yes, yes. Okay. That's one of them, but there's other worse ones than that. But I got to say, like, because they caught me and everything, like when I was holding her bra, when she was jumping off of this onto the table. And I'm like, why the fuck did they shoot all that? Because we went over it in rehearsal and they weren't supposed to shoot it. But it just made it look so stupid because there was like three or four things I had to do for the girls that we knew if they didn't get done, and they wanted me to definitely protect them and help them hold her bras. She had her on the corner of the turnbuckles and went off the table. And I had a whole, you know, it's just, but they caught everything. And that was a camera fuck up that night. But
yeah,
it made me look like shit.
Yeah, those moments are, yeah, it's especially when it's just an angle and you're like, come on, man. Yeah. Like Kevin Dunn, what the fuck, man? You switch camera angles 40 times a second. You couldn't have switched for that second.
Right. I remember, who was it too? God, who's the guy that worked the Kurt Angle's gimmick, the tag team with the two young brothers?
Shelton
and Charlie Haas.
No, not Shelton, Charlie Haas. The ones after them, the younger guys, just not a few years ago.
American Alpha?
Yes.
Yeah. Jason Jordan and I can't remember.
Chad Gable.
And he's a hell of a worker.
Gable's, you know, great.
He's a great worker.
Great, very entertaining.
And it was funny because, right, and he worked with the English guy on NXT. With the red hair, he's a hell of a little worker too in his own way. He had the red mustache, the red hair, Irish guy.
Sheamus.
English, not Sheamus.
Jack Gallagher. Gallagher, yep.
So real quick, here on the story, they had a fantastic match. It was like a main event thing on NXT. Chad Gable was coming back and going on his own pretty much, you know. And I remember fucking counting them out and counting. And I'm counting in the ring, and I'm like, and they're taking it. We're almost going home. And then fucking, you know, he's selling on the floor, Gallagher and Gable. Gable gets up on 5-6. Gallagher fucking laying there at 7. And I'm like, hey, get the fuck up. Get up. You know? And I'm like, hey, get the fuck up here. 9. And he's like looking at me, and I'm like, what the fuck's his problem? And he jumps up and he lays on the outside the ropes on the end of the apron. And I'm like, I looked down and went, 10. He goes, what the fuck? I'm like, you got to get inside the fucking ropes. You're outside the fucking ropes. And they're like, he's running around and like, oh shit. He's like, Kyoto, no, don't start. I rang the bell already. What the fuck do you want me to do? He goes, restart the match. I'm like, restart the fucking match. Are you fucking out of your mind? Can't restart this match. I'm like, I counted you out. You know, how are we gonna do this? I made the mistake.
was it DiBiase Jr.? That referee is trying to fuck on me.
Yeah, right. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Oh, wow,
I couldn't believe it, man. I'm just like, and I felt so bad. They had such a fucking tear down ass match. We were 18 minutes in the match. We had like 3 minutes to go home. And I'm like, what the fuck? He goes, it's my fault. I'm sorry, mate. I'm just like, man, I felt bad, but that kind of shit even depresses me because I'm like, fuck, these guys work so hard, but I had to do what I had to do because it would look stupid.
Yeah,
you know,
you have your job to do, and like,
yeah, I mean, it was just like he literally came up on 9.5, and he just laid on the, and he like took his hand, held the rope, and then he laid back on the edge, got an apron. I'm looking, I'm going, what the fuck? 10.
Damn it.
And I'm like, count out. But then both these guys are like, let's start the match. We start the match. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, no, match. It just ended, man. It just ended, man. Oh, man.
That's why I'm surprised on that count. You know, like, if I was counting, I'd have counted 10.
Yeah, you that know? Was the thing. And that was at the Royal Rumble 2021. I still haven't been able to find out who the referees were because I actually want to listen to what you're saying. Yeah.
There's no good database of who refs what matches.
Yeah, but yeah, so if you go back and you check out the Last Man Standing match, and you skip to the end and the Royal Rumble from 2021, you'll see. And it was just really awkward because the way they had handcuffed Roman Reigns to the bottom of a scaffolding or something.
Wow.
Yeah. And Paul Heyman. Thunderdome. Yeah. And Heyman was supposed to use the key, but the way that they was cuffed, the key was on the back, on the inside.
Right.
And so he couldn't reach it easily. And it just was like, what do we do? And it just was like one of those things you're like, it felt like, you know, there should have been the counting, or if at the very least someone should have smacked the referee enough to make him fall down. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, I mean, somebody do something, you know.
Especially considering it was, you know, Paul Heyman was out there who should.
There was enough people who were smart enough and been around long enough to know to do something.
Right. Either just bump the second referee, knock him the fuck out, you know, and do something else and just get into something else and make the other referee come back out, you know.
Yeah, like, anything.
Get up, come out of his cell.
Yeah,
but
it was an awkward one. But yeah, definitely. I'm sure you'll want to check
that out. Because I'm surprised. Because to me, I would have told, like, if I'm in trouble with my thumb on my ass, I would have, you know, I would have been counting and been like, Paulie, get in here and fucking hang all over me. If it's the last man standing, or if there's no disqualifications, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Then just come in and fucking grab me. I mean, you know how many times I've told managers, hey, get up here now. Fucking, I need more time. I need you to, you know, get in and I'll stop you at the ring. Yeah. Right. You know, managers and Olsen, Paul would get that like that, you know?
Yeah, it really felt like just those moments where
none
of the pieces came together.
If Paul is, because that's why I want to see that. That's why I want to see that. I never heard about it. I would have had fun talking about that on the podcast because, you know, like Paul being a heel manager, what does it matter if you're going in distracting or hanging on the referee or, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's going to put the heat on the heel.
Yeah, it's Paul Heyman.
Right. It's not going to put the heel on the ref, you know? I mean, the heat on the ref. So that would take away the heat on the ref, which I don't get, but I like
that. Man. Yeah, definitely check that out. I just have one last question, really, and I'm just curious as to, I know, I mean, you spent so long in WWE, worked with so many of these people.
Right.
All these releases that have been happening in the last 2 years, what's going on there? I mean,
I don't
know. So much talent, like guys who are incredible workers.
I know. Daniel Bryan, and fucking, you don't re-sign him. And then
Bray Wyatt.
I don't get it. I just don't. I hear there's just, I'm hearing rumors they may sell to Disney. So, you know, if they sell to Disney and stuff like that, man, it could be a lot of money. And they're just trying to cut their roster. But yeah, how do you get rid of Brock Lesnar? It was, and then like my buddy Rey Mysterio, he stayed in my house last week when they were in Tampa. He went to negotiations with Vince and he almost, his stuff didn't almost work out with Vince, you know? But he convinced Vince. I think Hunter wasn't going to sign. He didn't want to deal with Hunter. You know, he wanted to deal with Vince.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it's like me. Hunter told me, like, hey, I want to see you go out strong in your career a few years ago. And I even moved to Tampa for better living, better beaches. And plus, you know, if I have to start working at the PC in Orlando.
Yeah.
And fucking, and I was doing, I had surgery on my shoulder, rotator cuff and two bicep tears. And then I get fucking released during a pandemic.
And I mean, you had just signed a new contract too, right? I mean, weren't you a month into your new contract or something?
Yeah, like a year, a year or two. Yeah, I just got a bump. I was off for like 4 or 5 months during the surgery, total for six, because I had two bicep tears. That took the longest. And rotator cuff and something else done. So Dugas did it in Alabama, which is the best, you know, Dr. Dugas under St. Andrews in Alabama University. And fucking get the call, get released. It was like, what the fuck, you know? And I knew something was wrong because I was the only referee that got released. And I'm like, where the fuck did I get my heat? You know, like, I was out for surgery. In my whole career, I took off three months for an ACL 4 years ago, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Then I came back early because Shane wanted me to come back to do his match against AJ Styles in WrestleMania. Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I was supposed to be back in 6 months. I came back in three with that, and I had a cadaver put in because I had a bad ACL for many years. I just wore a brace.
Yeah.
And I dealt with it. So, you know, to me, it was a fucking shock. And I'm like, they ain't staying money on my fucking salary. I mean, I was making good money. Don't get me wrong. You know, like 230 grand a year working TVs. And
yeah.
I didn't have to go overseas as much anymore. You know, I did have to go to Saudi and special events like that, you know. But they got rid of so many guys. And then Brock Lesnar didn't sign. This one, Big Show, Mark Henry. I mean, it's like.
Guys who, I mean. Mark Henry, especially, I mean, was a shocking one considering that, you know, he never worked anyplace else, you know, and it was Vince right. who made him, you know.
Like right.
He, I mean, obviously he had his powerlifting career, but I mean,
right.
You know, you're not making millions powerlifting, you know.
No. I actually seen Big Show in a nightclub in Philadelphia. So he's a bouncer at a nightclub in Philadelphia years and years ago before he started with WCW, and he gave me his number, Paul White, right? You know, and so I gave it to Pat Patterson. I said, Pat, this fucking guy looks like Andre. He fucking has hands like Andre. He's big. He's long hair. He's fucking in great shape. Lean, like not lean, but he's fucking in great
wow.
shape. That when that guy comes to us, and I remember the night that we're in like North Carolina or somewhere, and you know, Vincent, Pat Patterson, and all them guys are watching the monitors in their room and the Briscoes and whatever, and you know, monitoring what's going on with fucking Nitro. So they, you know, for the second seg, you know, from 9 to 10, they got to switch up, keep the, you know, see what match they're going to put on compared to their match, so the ratings won't lose the mm-hmm. ratings, and then the main event, of course, you know.
Yeah.
And so forth, but they always followed their show. And I remember walking by when Big Show fucking made his debut. You know, I said, hey, Pat, hey, excuse me, Vince. Hey, Pat, how you doing, Vince? Hey, Mike, what's up? Yo, hey, Mike, how you doing? You know, I said, that fuck, because I already heard it was seen on the TV somewhere else that Big Show made his, you know, debut. And fucking, I said, Pat, that guy never fucking worked out. And he goes, what guy? And I said, that guy, Pat. I said, I gave you his number, man, like a month or two ago, man. That guy from Philadelphia, the bouncer, the big fuck. Vince goes, what? What the fuck? You met him where? I said, I met him in Philadelphia like a month or two ago. He goes, Mike, that's the fucking guy you met? Pat goes, no. And I'm like, yes, that's the guy I met, Pat, in Philly at a nightclub off of Delaware Ave, you know, like all of a sudden. You know, Delaware River, we had the bars, there's a bunch of bars and clubs. So he goes, are you fucking kidding me, Pat? He goes, Mike, he goes, oh, what the fuck? And then slammed the door. He goes, are you fucking kidding me, Pat? I am screaming at Pat. Next thing you know, Pat comes out, goes, Mike, what the fuck? He goes, I told you, he goes, fuck, we had signed Ogante. I thought you meant. We already had this guy's number because I thought you meant this was El Gante you met. We already had him signed. I just didn't want to say nothing to you.
Oh, no.
I said, no, Pat. I told you this guy looked like Big Show, man. I mean, Andre the Giant. He looked like the hair.
So is this when
Show comes to
Pat had to start doing the Kiss My Ass Club and all
probably. That. Probably.
This is along the lines of hiring the wrong one-legged wrestler.
Serious. And even has Big Show about this. He's even mentioned this before, you know, on his podcast and some things. So then, you know, he was so fucking, and Show came to fucking WWF at the time or whatever, you know, comes to us and he goes, hey, yeah, thanks a lot, you piece of shit, for fucking giving my number to Pat. Or like you said you were going to give my number in, you know, and I'm like, Don't fucking blame me. I said, no way, dude. I said, I gave it to fucking Pat Patterson. Let him tell you that fucking story. You know? Because he really wanted to make his debut on WWF. You know what I'm saying?
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a big league.
But yeah.
So, wow.
And I took the number and he threw it out. He said, he could like rumbled up the fucking
I thought I already had it. That we already signed him. Wow.
Man, because you know what? People did get finder's fee. If you found somebody, you know, you get a finder's fee too. You would get a finder's fee.
Especially someone who's like,
like him.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Wow.
Look at all the years he spent there too. They fucking just, they didn't want to give him shit. They wanted to give him just royalties, I heard. Just royalties. And they can control that check. $5,000, $10,000.
Yeah.
Carly.
35 cents.
I'm telling you, they can give you all that. That's what they can do. So if they just wanted to give him fucking shit check, like royalties, Carlito was going to come back to the WWE, right? Great shape.
I remember he was there for like two matches or something.
Brother, they wanted to give him $10,000 plus $500 a signing thing. They wanted him to do some signings and wrestle once in a while. It was like a shit contract, shit money. It was like a kick in the face. He's like, are you fucking kidding me? This ain't even a legendary deal. What the fuck is this? Your own deal now?
Wow.
You know, Legends deal is a lot more than that or something, you know.
And even those, I mean, for the most part, there aren't that many left. I mean, we talked to Godfather a couple weeks ago, and he was like, I think I just know too many stories.
Yes. Yeah. He's still running that strip club in Vegas?
No, he sold that, I think.
Did he sell it?
3 or 4 years ago. Oh, Cheetahs he sold.
Yeah. Oh, that was
a good place. Yeah, he said he was like, yeah, no interest in going back to that. He just hangs out and smokes weed and plays disc golf and shoots guns.
Good, man. Good.
Like he's enjoying himself.
Yeah, I miss him.
I'm curious, what do you have going on these days?
LEWE. We got Latin American Wrestling Entertainment, man, going on. We're starting our first show October 9th. So this is what happened. So we were going to set up. And the Colognes and Stacy, the CEO of the company, Stacy Colone, they started doing some Channel 2. I was in Puerto Rico quite a few times going over some stuff. I'm going to be taking care of the ring production, revamping the ring, making sure that looks TV ready like I've done for years. They're going to have a nice setup and everything. And actually, I'll be refereeing, training referees there, doing production and so forth, other things in the company. Now Eddie Colon and Orlando Colon and Stacy are the CEOs and owners of the company. So Colon's got a big name. We're trying to bring wrestling back to Latin America. Carlito and Andrade are the main event coming up in that show. I'll be reffing that match.
All right.
We got some good talent coming in there too, the Good Brothers. And hopefully Alberto Dorito's gonna make a little bit of a comeback soon. So there's some good talent. Yeah, I don't know if he gets some things taken care of, but you know, hopefully I see him work because he's an unbelievable worker too.
I mean, despite all his bullshit, yeah, I was always a fan of his work. I loved his work in Lucha Underground.
Yeah, he's a good dude, man. He really is a cool guy, man. Yeah. He's got a temper, but he's a good dude. Yeah. But you know, we got some good talent though, young talent, Mike Mendoza. And some good talent coming in. We might even have Chris Masters in every once in a while. Hopefully he pops in and does some shows. And, you know, like Jake Hager, we're going to try and branch and get some other guys. And the AEW guys, remember, they can do whatever they want. So they can do whatever they want. They're not contracted like Vince contracts you. And he doesn't let you do any other shit. So, you know, and it's going to be it's a new beginning for Latin America. So what does WWE do? We're trying to promote. They were on Channel 2 News, Stacy and Eddie Colon and all this, and we're promoting, looking for the October 2nd. So a couple weeks ago, guess who books October 2nd at the Coliseum? WWE. So that's a good play by Hunter and them. You know, that's a very good play.
I mean, yeah. They've been their MO since Vince took over.
Right. So, I mean, they never book a show less than 2 months away in Puerto Rico, you know, like that quick. So, I said, you know what? We had some meetings. We talked and said, you know what? Let's feed off of their crowd. Let's plug the billboards and the LEWE coming soon, coming October 9th. We're going to be on pay-per-view at Fight TV. And this is a good opportunity to advertise our show in the wrestling. Yep. So, and Carlito and I think Andrade will draw a good house, man. So it'll be cool. They got a good card going on.
Yeah, as long as you don't have to go and sell flyers, man.
That's it. But they're going to have that. They're going to have a lot of young girls in some bikinis or whatever, tight shorts running around, passing out flyers. And they go, we got some big billboards, you know, LAW, awesome. Some LED boards going up around the Coliseum. So,
and on Fight TV on October 9th.
That's it.
Awesome. That's it. Awesome.
So,
anything else you want to plug?
No, I mean, you know, my Twitter is that at MJC Chioda, Chioda. And, you know, I'm on Twitter and everything. Hit me up on Twitter. And that's it. I got some shirts at Pro Tees Wrestling.
Pro Wrestling. You got some nice, you got some nice gear up there.
Got some decent gear. I got to change it up. I got to get some new stuff. So, and that's it, man. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
You got to get the shirt, you know, with the graphic image of you standing over Jack Gallagher with the 10 count saying, what the fuck?
Okay. Yeah, right. I hear you, man. I hear you.
Thank you so much, man. We really appreciate your joining us and the perspective. We've talked to a good number of wrestlers, but cool. It's really interesting to hear a different side of the business, especially considering, you know, how long you were in it, who got you into the business, and
right.
everything you got to see in between. So it was really interesting, really fascinating talking to you. And cool, I appreciate yeah. your time.
Yeah, I would love to do it again. You know, man, it's been crazy. Like all the stuff I'm going to be maybe next time, but hopefully we'll do another podcast, man. I'm ready to do my garage because I got so much wrestling, cool stuff, man. Like, I'm looking at a big poster with, you know, ECW or Rob Van Dam 2006, and I'm going to make my whole single car garage into a podcast room and a awesome. Bar. So
that's, you know, awesome,
and that's where I'll be smoking with you and drinking when I get the
bar. Hell yes, we would love to have you back on when you get it all set up for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me on, guys. It's been a pleasure talking
again, to you. Again, thank you so much for joining us.
You guys, man. Thank you for the support of all the careers. Is that a Pillman shirt?
It is. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, it is a Brian. That's cool.
Yeah. This one in one of the pro wrestling tees boxes.
Oh, nice, man. Nice. Yeah. Yeah, he was a wild one.
yeah, incredible.
That's good.
Awesome. All right. Well, I'm gonna take a drink to Brian Pillman before we head on.
You got it, man.
I'll join.
Cheers. All right.
Cheers, man. Salute,
have a great
guys.
Night.
Thank Salute. You. Have a great night.
You too, guys. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Such Good Shoot. If you are on YouTube, please remember to like, subscribe, and ring that bell icon. Or subscribe to us on your favorite audio catcher. Or finally, if you're on Facebook, leave a comment, like the video, and make sure to share it out to all your friends. Until next time, we have been Such Good Shoot, and have a great day.